now with over 25 years of experience integrating mental health and spirituality, the author of Reclaiming Authenticity, When Ancestors Weep, and Redeeming the Bereaved. Here is Dr. James Houck.
All right. Good evening, everybody, wherever you are in the world at this time. Welcome to Reclaiming Authenticity, finding one's courage to reclaim that which has always been in you. In fact, to reclaim and remember who you are and have always been. Very happy to be with you here tonight and every other Wednesday night at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 6 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. And each and every one of these broadcasts focuses on the integration of spirituality and our mental health, all within the context of our relationships with ourselves, others, and God or the divine. I am Dr. James Houck, and if you would like more information about me or to leave me your comments about today's show, please visit the website. It's www.bbsradio.com/reclaiming authenticity. That's www.bbsradio.com/reclaiming authenticity. And if you would like to call in and be part of the show, the number is 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. And I will be taking your calls after the break. And just like to say that these broadcasts are now podcasted. In case you want to go back and listen again, or you can go back into the archives and listen to previous shows. All you have to do is just go into the website and just scroll down. You'll see the archive section, and then just click on any show that you would like to listen to. So. At the beginning of these broadcasts, you know, I'm known for the fact that I always like to share with new audience members where I'm coming from in terms of just exactly what is reclaiming authenticity and even how I came up with it. Well, the name and actually the whole premise comes from a deep-seated belief that I carry around in myself that all of us come into this world already equipped and graced with everything we need in terms of our skills, our talents, our strengths, our giftedness, character traits, so on and so forth. And how we live out our giftedness and skills and talents and strengths is in and through various relationships, personal, professional, and so forth. And as social beings, it's often within the context of relationships themselves that we unfortunately experience tremendous pain and suffering. And these could be anything from overt acts of, let's say, betrayal and cruelty that somebody has inflicted against us, or vice versa, to simply being in the wrong place at the wrong time. And many people bear the scars of physical, psychological, emotional, and spiritual woundedness. And this is something that I like to call the irony of life, that is how we often receive our deepest physical, emotional, psychological, and even spiritual wounds in relationships. And the tragedy is that how often do we go along in this life, and maybe perhaps due to some unpleasant experiences, we may tend to hide our giftedness. Or we push our passions and our skills and our uniqueness way down so that others cannot see it. And we forget all about it because we were told that maybe growing up we would never amount to anything, or that we will never measure up to another person's standards, or whatever other voice we heard telling us that there's nothing special to us. But there is. It's a uniqueness. It is a hachetas in Latin. It is, as I explain to the kids that I counsel, look at it and think of it in terms of a thumbprint. that no two thumbprints are alike. There's the uniqueness, and yet everybody has a thumbprint, and there's the uniqueness that we all share. So again, this uniqueness that we have is how we live out our lives through the giftedness and the skills and the talents and everything else. And so this can be our way of living out these aspects in relationships, because as we discover our greatest healing and the strength that we're looking for and the peace and the forgiveness and the love, we find these through healthier relationships. And these relationships just might be within our own families. They might be among coworkers. They might be among our friends. And yet, because we are in relationships with others, once we are transformed and are transforming, we also transform others by one degree or another through our presence, our grace, our understanding. And since we are healing and seeing ourselves differently, we will inevitably see others differently and treat one another differently. But first, forgiveness, kindness, compassion begin with how we treat ourselves. Because when we are compassionate with ourselves, we then can be more compassionate with others. And when we are forgiving and more forgiving with ourselves, then we can be more forgiving with others. And when we can live in gratitude with ourselves and just live in thankfulness day in and day out, we then discover how this gratitude opens up our hearts to see and live in gratitude with others. So, transformation, first and foremost, begins with us. And this is what reclaiming authenticity is all about. Reclaiming that which has always been in you, reclaiming your awareness of who you truly are. Or, as Richard Rohr, the author, puts it, your true self is who you are and always have been in God. The great surprise and irony are that you, or who you think you are, has nothing to do with its original creation or its demise. It's sort of disempowering and utterly empowering at the same time. But all we can do is nurture this. And Joseph Ryle, Beautiful Painted Arrow, also states in his book, Becoming Medicine, that the way you become a medicine person is that you practice who you are, because you're already medicine. Nobody gives it to you. You are already it. And a framework for all growth and transformation in our lives begins with seeking this truth. Well, as I said, welcome to tonight's show. It's entitled Celebrating the Divine Feminine Energy in All Things. And I will certainly have a lot more to say about how the divine feminine energy is manifested in the second half of tonight's show. Well, this coming Sunday is Mother's Day. And if you're like me and perhaps the rest of the world, your thoughts are focused on the women in our lives who have not only given us birth, but also whether or not we were related to them or they were related to us, how they nurtured us in their own way, you know, their own uniqueness, their own hachiatos, or taught us life lessons, whether formally in school or informally out of school. Or perhaps they've been instrumental in some way by shaping us into the men and women we are today. And for the past couple of weeks, and if not sooner, you know, we've been bombarded with all kinds of advertisements for Mother's Day hints of, you know, for gifts such as flowers and jewelry and cards and dinner reservations and so on and so forth. But surprisingly, few people know about the origins of Mother's Day, which actually took place back in the early 1900s. So there are many versions of this story, but this is the story that I like the best. So, as stories go, it all started by a woman named Anna Jarvis, who led a campaign for an official holiday honoring mothers way back in 1905, the year her mother died. And this first larger scale celebration of the holiday was in 1908, when Jarvis held a public memorial for her mother in her hometown of Grafton, West Virginia. Because you see, Anna's mother played an important role in uniting women for good causes. And Anne Revis Jarvis even cared for wounded soldiers on both sides of the field during the Civil War. And in its aftermath, she organized a Mother's Friendship Day, which had it as the goal of which was to foster reconciliation between former Union and Confederate soldiers by having them come together along with their mothers from both sides. So over the next few years, her daughter, Anna, who really pushed to have this holiday officially recognized, and it was celebrated increasingly in more and more states and around the United States. And finally, in 1914, President Woodrow Wilson signed a proclamation making Mother's Day an official holiday, which actually is to take place on the second Sunday of May, which is still celebrated today. So, however, in the first few years of the holiday's official existence, Jarvis noticed that flowers, candy makers, florists, candy makers, card makers, even charities used Mother's Day to make an extra buck. And the commercialization of Mother's Day, according to Jarvis, defeated the whole purpose of a holiday that was supposed to be about celebrating the personal, individual connection between a mother and her children. So tell me, has anything changed? That's, the early 1900s. But, with it being held on Sunday, this week, May 12th, many churches and other organizations are certainly preparing for record attendance by mothers and their families. In schools this week, I've noticed that children have made cards or they have grown little carnations or marigolds to be given to their mothers this Sunday. Actually, they'll be given to them on Friday when they get off the bus. There will be flowers galore given out to mothers and grandmothers from marigolds, carnations, and roses and things like that, from adoring children to roadside shops selling bouquets and orchids for those who need to be reminded to pick up flowers for their mothers in their lives. And yet, despite the wonder and the splendor and the joy demonstrated by many in celebrating Mother's Day, Mother's Day for many women and men has become a constant reminder of painful experiences. Because you see, for many, their biological mothers, let's say, really didn't have the ability to nurture their children, or let alone provide a safe home for them to grow up in. And many children faced harsh discipline and shame as they experienced generational traumas that were being lived out over and over again and again. And some women and men, really wanted to be mothers and fathers. The same is true with grandmothers and grandfathers who wanted to celebrate children in their lives, but for one reason or another, they have experienced miscarriages or stillbirths or other medical issues or have lost children to disease or illnesses or even random accidents that have really exacerbated their pain and grief each year on Mother's Day. So for me, Mother's Day has always been about kind of an emotional mixture of celebration, gratitude, and forgiveness, as I believe Mother's Day ought to be more inclusive and honor all women at any age. So with that being said, I want to share with you, I came across a prayer that years ago I came across this that really captures the celebration, the gratitude, and honor of all women. And it's just simply entitled, The Prayer for Mothers. for our mothers who have given us life and love, that we may show them reverence and love, we pray to the Lord. For mothers who have lost a child through death, that their faith may give them hope, and their family and friends support and console them, we pray to the Lord. For women, though without children of their own, who, like mothers, have nurtured and cared for us, we pray to the Lord. And for mothers who have been unable to be a source of strength, who have not responded to their children, and who have not sustained their families, we pray to the Lord. And so, loving God, as a mother gives life and nourishment to her children, so watch over your people. Bless these women, that they may be strengthened as mothers. And let the example of their faith and love shine forth. And grant that we, their sons and daughters, may honor them always with a spirit of profound respect. Amen. Like I said, a very beautiful prayer, and I haven't been able to find one that rivals that. Because as I said, you know, it's just, for me, Mother's Day is very inclusive. But there's another aspect of not only Mother's Day, but prior to this becoming a national holiday, is how women have been treated down through the centuries. And a lot of suffering in silence, and you've probably heard me talk about this on other broadcasts. But, you know, suffering, pain, and misery no longer have power over women when they realize the power that they have always possessed from the very beginning. Their voice. That's right, their voice. Down through the centuries upon centuries upon centuries, women have actually been forced into silence through, let's say, intimidation or coercion and violence done to them. And the thought was, you know, we take away their voice and we could take away their power. But when women find their voice, look out and get out of their way, they will no longer be silent. Well, as a counseling educator and a clinician and a pastoral professional, I'm often saddened by the women I talk to who believe that when it comes to addressing their physical and psychological, emotional, and spiritual problems, that they consider themselves powerless and without a voice. You know, and perhaps this is a result of never feeling valued or being allowed to use their voice. I mean, admittedly, many people are unable to perceive their insights and their own strengths, as if they cannot see themselves as capable of healing, or let alone achieving anything meaningful with their lives. Because you see, most of the time, people are content to live for brief moments of joy and celebration that have been marked off by, let's say, transitional milestones of baptisms and marriages and birthdays and graduations and promotions and retirements, et cetera, et cetera. And furthermore, when it comes to wrestling with life's questions, many people are often overwhelmed, not only by the concept that the answers they seek lie within themselves, but also by the belief that this inner freedom and peace and joy and unconditional love are all too good to be true. And yet, greatest effect hearing the cries of others has on us not only comes from getting in touch with our own soul's voice, but also awakens us to hear the cries of those who have no voice today, or those who have yet to find their voice. Because there has always existed in society a pattern of disenfranchising the weak and the wounded. You know, people who have been labeled as unlovable, untouchable, and because of this, they're considered unreachable. And for some, disenfranchisement was due to their disease or their illness. But for others, it was due to their poverty. And still, for others, it was due to their gender, their race, their religion, politics, or social class. And many in society preferred such people not to be seen, let alone heard from. However, just as the cries of our ancestors and those who have been victims of crimes against humanity can never be silenced, so too are the cries of the disenfranchised heard above the din of everyday life. The cries are not only heard deep within the soul, but also their pain can be given a voice through those who speak for them. And I've been, you know, I've really had the honor of working with generations of women who have been made to carry heartbreaking, emotional, physiological, psychological, and spiritual wounds in silence. And there are many, many times when women who live today carry these burdens that have been handed down from great-grandmother to grandmother to mother to daughters and so on and so forth. It's been handed down in their DNA, or it's a learned helplessness or a learned behavior, whatever it might be. And yet, there is tremendous healing for women who, once they find their voices, use their voices, and they use their voices and their energy to transform generations. And many people, you know, men and women, okay, are unable to perceive their insights and strengths. But most of the time, people are content, as I said before, just to live for brief moments. Okay? And yet, the human voice itself has tremendous power, because it carries with it the energy of its vibration. And this is perhaps why people who deny truth do not tolerate those who mention the truth, or at least have a different perspective. I mean, you know what I'm talking about. Somebody presents something that's true and just right on. And, you know, what do people who don't want to hear it want to do? They want to silence the person. They want to get rid of the person or whatever. Almost as if we get rid of the person, we'll get rid of the truth. But that's simply not true. And here's another good example of what I mean. You know, one of the major psychosocial spiritual obstacles that I often run into when counseling others really occurs when emotionally or psychologically wounded people are genuinely frightened and immobilized by their potential for healing and inner growth. You see, failure is not the only thing that people fear. It's the idea of finding inner peace and freedom that's also immobilizing. And indeed, this is true for us. You know, even tonight, just to ask ourselves, what has so wounded ourselves that allows us to continuously act out of our woundedness in relationships and expect different results? Let me say that again. What has so wounded us that allows us to continuously act out of our woundedness in relationships and then expect different results? And we wonder why we don't heal? So in the second half of the broadcast tonight, as I said, I would like to share with you aspects of the divine feminine and masculine energy that create an opportunity for all to heal. So if you would like to call in, again, that number is 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. And I'll be taking your calls after this break. Again, you are listening to Reclaiming Authenticity, and I'm your host, Dr. James Houck. I'll be back with you in 1 minute. Right, welcome back. You have been listening to Reclaiming Authenticity. I am your host, Dr. James Houck. And earlier in the show, I was talking about how despite the wonder and splendor and joy by many people in celebrating Mother's Day, that Mother's Day for many women and men have become a constant reminder of painful experiences. Because you see, for many, their biological mothers just could not nurture them, or let alone provide a safe home for them to grow up in. Or maybe many children faced harsh disciplines and shame as they experienced generational traumas that were being lived out over and over and again and again. So some women and men who have a strong desire to become parents, and even the older generations who wanted to become grandmothers and grandfathers, who really, really wanted to have children, but for one reason or another have experienced miscarriages and stillbirths or other medical issues, or have lost the children to disease, illnesses, even random accidents that have exacerbated their pain and grief each year on Mother's Day. And these are the men and women that we do not want to forget. And so if your neighbor or somebody you know, or even yourself, falls into this category of you wanted to have children, but for one reason or another, as I just mentioned, I know it's tough. I know it is tough. Not just because some guys out here telling you about it, but before my wife and I had children, we experienced 3 miscarriages. And so we know what it's like to have children and lose them to miscarriages. And we got to a point where we didn't know whether or not we were going to actually have children. But we did. 2 beautiful children, 1 beautiful granddaughter. And so we know the pain of what it's like on Mother's Day, even Father's Day. You know, I'll be speaking about that in June, Father's Day. But so I get it. You know, a lot of women just, quite frankly, just want to stay home and not go to church or not go out to breakfast or whatever. You know, they don't want to be reminded of, you know, everybody gets a flower and all the mothers get a flower. And yet, perhaps we should be mindful to give all women flowers because of the nurturing qualities all females, all women possess. So, as I said at the beginning, you know, for me, Mother's Day has always been about an emotional mixture of this celebration and gratitude and even forgiveness, as I believe Mother's Day ought to be more inclusive and honor all women at any age. See, it's about celebrating the divine feminine regardless of gender. Because quite frankly, when we talk about the divine feminine energy and the divine masculine energy, we are speaking of the potential for manifesting energy within us that we pretty much embody. It's energy. Okay? It's not a literal feminine masculine in the physical sense, although we often wrongly assign gender to this. You know, these terms of the divine feminine energy and divine masculine energy is not about gender. It's not about sex. It's not that the divine feminine energy is assigned strictly to females, nor is the divine masculine energy is exclusively assigned to males. But there is a completeness that I believe humanity is waking up to, but has not fully realized. Because regardless of gender, we have the potential to access both the divine feminine energy and the divine masculine energy. And in doing so, it empowers us to be co-creators of healing, creativity, and life. See, the divine feminine energy empowers us to reflect and pay attention to our intuition. You know, the act of creation or of getting an idea and then, let's say, birthing it. That's the realm of the divine feminine. And other aspects of the divine feminine energy can also be characterized as, you know, the ability to pause and take a deep breath to calm down and reflect. And divine feminine energy also empowers us to be better at taking care of ourselves and loving ourselves. It also enables us to find creative reflection and inspiration. It enables us to be empathetic and to be vulnerable and to be that healing presence for people who just need empathy and need somebody to sit with in their vulnerability. And certainly, being able to make judgments by trusting one's intuition that comes from one's heart space and prioritizing feelings and having good communication skills, even without using words sometimes. This is all divine feminine energy. And yet, the divine masculine energy, we also find empathy, compassion, honesty. There's integrity, there's confidence and vulnerability. There's strong boundaries and patience. Or, as one person put it to me, that the divine energy is like a river, and the divine masculine energy is the banks of the river. But when misused or out of balance, you know, the masculine energy can really become toxic or stoic. It can become aggressive and dominating that we continue to see around us being played out even to this day. Know, in the work that I do with people healing from intergenerational trauma, I've really come to understand that it involves not just healing the psychological, emotional, physical, and spiritual wounds of the past, present, and future generations, but also involves restoring a corrective balance of divine feminine and divine masculine energies for all generations. I can't tell you how many times I've had conversations with men who are in relationships with women, whether it's their wives, it's their partners, it's their girlfriends. And we always get on the subject of how did you know he was the one? Or how did she know that you were the one for her? And it's interesting because the men are kind of stumped by this. You know, like, I don't know. I never asked her why she fell in love with me. She just did. And I try to clue them into the fact that it's like, well, it's probably not anything you said, but it was probably something you did. In fact, it was probably something that you had shown her. And by that, I mean that when men show their hearts, that's what women fall in love with. Somehow, some way, a man will open up his heart and a woman will see that and go, that's it. That's it. That's what I'm looking for. That's what I'm falling in love with. And so I try to reassure men. It's like, look, guys, our greatest strength is not in our biceps. Our greatest strength is not, doesn't come from being all buff and everything. It's not that. Our greatest strength is our heart. And that's the feminine energy that is coming forth. And so all men have that potential to show not just women, but other men and children their hearts, because that is where the greatest strength of them lies. Well, I believe that. And you've probably heard me mention this many times because I love to talk about intergenerational healing. But I believe the impact of healing intergenerational trauma can be best understood as a starburst. Okay? The starburst. You get the image? Much like the sparklers that children light on the 4th of July, as one person heals from trauma, that energy radiates out in all directions and time and dimensions. And all relationships, regardless of time and space, are transformed. And this is how interconnected we are as human beings and the world in which we live. And just think about this for a little bit. Just imagine how a single negative thought carries enough destructive energy to affect hundreds, if not thousands, of people every day. Now, imagine that same potential from a single positive thought. You hear the difference? Do you see the difference? All the more reason healing intergenerational trauma is crucial, very crucial, if we're going to be able to heal ourselves. We have to take an honest look at what has come down through the generations. And I tell you, the people who get healing intergenerational trauma the most are kids. 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15-year-olds. They love this stuff because, I'm sitting there with them and they'd rather not be in therapy. And like, okay, I get it. I get it. But you're here, so let's make the best of it. And of course, conversations always come back around to, well, tell me about your family. And depending on what's going on in their lives, they either have a lot to say or they don't have anything good to say. And so, we're just talking. I'm like, well, okay, tell me not only about your mom and dad, but tell me about your grandparents. And we start going back through the generations, and some things were revealed, like maybe there was alcoholism. Or, maybe there was tremendous sexual abuse or something that comes down through the generations and for one reason or another lands on the child that is sitting with me. And once these kids get a glimpse of that, boy, do they get mad. They get hot because they say, if all this was coming down through the generations, why couldn't my ancestors stop this? Why did it have to land on me? Why am I sitting here with you? Why do I have to be blamed for everything? And that's when I smile and I look at the kid in the eyes and I go, have you ever considered that one, you're not the problem of the family? But maybe you're the solution. That perhaps you're the strongest one in the family to be able to heal all this intergenerational trauma stuff. And when kids get that, boy, do they sit up. Boy, do they get a great big smile on their face. And they're like, cool. I'm the solution to my family's problems. Because I'm not the problem. To that, I just say, yeah, you're right. You never were the problem. It's just, great grandmothers and grandfathers and grandfathers and grandmothers and parents, they were just unable to stop it. But you can. You can heal yourself. So let's keep talking about this and how you can bring healing to your mom and dad or bring healing to your grandparents or so forth. And I had a very distinct pleasure of working with three generations of women in my office related to intergenerational trauma and helping them find their voice. And not just finding their voice, but to use their voice to be healing and strength going forward. So, long time ago, I was sitting with a teenager, Kayla. Pseudonym. She was a 15-year-old high school student who was acting out in school. And she went from being a straight A student to now she was getting C's in the course of a semester. And as Kayla started experimenting with various drugs, her friends and family noticed significant behavioral changes in her. She became more irritable. She certainly became more hostile. And she was becoming uninterested in normal teenage activities. And she was diagnosed with major depression. And then I assessed her for suicide ideation, and she was prescribed an antidepressant medication by her primary care doctor. And instead of treating her individually, Kayla agreed to family therapy that included her mother and her grandmother. And at the first meeting with Kayla, her mother, and her grandmother, I set the ground rules for therapy. You know, I explained to them that we're here not to place blame on anybody, but to help Kayla get better and to get an accurate history of the family, let's say. I started drawing a genogram, a genogram is basically a visual representation of a multi-generational family tree that highlights relationships among family members. You know, it looks at different generations coming down the family line, as well as what are the dynamics within every generation. And so I started to draw this genogram on a dry erase board that I had in my office. And as the names of cousins and aunts and uncles and significant family events filled up the board, I explained how emotional and behavioral patterns are not only mirrored, but also handed down through the generations. And immediately, metaphorical dots started to connect for Kayla and her mother, as stories from Kayla's grandmother filled in the details from her perspective. And she explained how she was raised by her mother and her grandmother, and what it was like growing up in her day. She shared how men and women were treated differently or lived with different social and religious expectations, and why jobs were scarce at times. And she also shared why so-and-so had extramarital affairs who struggled with excessive drinking, or even the reasons why a certainly family member had to move away. Well, all of a sudden, there were now five generations in the room with us, as it appeared that the ground rules for therapy gave Kayla's grandmother permission to talk about the family secrets. And interesting, now and then I looked over and I noticed how Kayla's body language went from sitting with her head in her hands, carefully listening to her grandmother's stories. She never heard these before. She was enthralled. And I could see in Kayla's eyes that she was starting to understand that she was not crazy. She was not lazy. She was not ugly. She was not stupid or any other negative belief that she ended up telling herself. So as we talked over the next few weeks, the genogram depicted generations of socioeconomic struggles in the family, or alcohol dependence and family attitudes around guilt and shame, and grandma's one big secret, her abortion at age 19. Through her tears, a broken heart, Grandma confessed that she had been carrying the guilt and the shame of her abortion for decades. In fact, she said every now and then she could hear her baby's cries in her dreams or if out in public. And although abortion was illegal back in her day, you know, Grandma said she had the abortion anyway, to spare her family the shame at the time of having a child out of wedlock. And she also shared how she wanted to tell her husband many times, but still feared being shunned. And immediately, Kayla burst into tears as she confessed that before last semester, she became pregnant, and she too had an abortion. She too could not bear shaming the family with this unplanned pregnancy, since they had so many high hopes for her. And all at once, these emotional floodgates were opened as three generations of women sat there and sobbed in each other's arms. And the relief from carrying these secrets was obvious in both the grandmother and granddaughter. And although Kayla's mother had no idea of these secrets, she too realized that for generations who did not believe in airing dirty laundry, suffering in silence is a horrible burden to bear. So in the weeks that followed, Kayla, her mother, and her grandmother continued to talk through generational struggles and unspoken lessons that characterized their family. Kayla and her grandmother even wrote letters of forgiveness to the children that they aborted. And grandma even brought in some old photos, which added, let's say, flesh and blood and soul to the stories. And certainly themes of forgive me, I forgive you, thank you, and I love you continued to empower these women to not only heal themselves, to also heal the generations that have long since passed, but also to impart their hopes and dreams for generations yet to be born. This is the completeness that I mentioned earlier that I believe humanity is waking up to, but has not fully realized. Because when women heal from their wounds, they find and use their voice. They transform humanity by helping men become better men. How do they do this? See, they begin to correct the imbalance of the divine feminine and the divine masculine energies within themselves. And when men find their own healing and transformation, they not only become better men, but they also empower women to become better women. It's a restoration of the balance of the divine feminine and divine masculine energies. And we all have masculine and feminine energy, you know, it's not about gender or sex. And regardless of gender, we can access both. In doing so, and we access the divine feminine and masculine energies. And when we do this, we are empowered to be co-creators of healing, creativity, and life. Just imagine for a moment, okay? Follow me on this. Just imagine for a moment what Mother's Days would look like if we honored not just the role of mothers and mother figures in our lives, but we also honored and celebrated the divine feminine energy in all things. So let me share with you a place and a people who exemplify this balance. As I mentioned many times in this show, I've been to India four times, and all four times I always visit Vatsalya Gram in Vrindavan, India. And the ashram itself is a mother and child ashram. And it's referred to as Pradham Shakti Peeth. It's a nonprofit, non-governmental and independent organization that actually was registered under the Society's Registration Act that came out way back in like 1860. And so in 1992, Pradham Shakti Peeth worked and still works to mainstream the marginalized members of society, and certainly prioritizing children and women, and alleviate other socioeconomic inequalities pervading in India and that are detrimental to the inclusive development and impede the growth of a nation as a whole. And this collective experience and insight and diverse perspectives from the founders have really been the foundation of belief and welfare and empowerment of children and women, especially of marginalized communities. And it's common knowledge that the benefits of the nation's growth have really not reached out to a vast section of society in India, as these marginalized members form a sizable part of the total population. And unless they are included in the mainstream economy, the growth of the nation is going to remain lopsided and therefore unsustainable. So certainly sharing this common concern was with a group of people from diverse backgrounds and professional disciplines who then founded the Param Shakti Peeth to serve as a vehicle for this inclusive growth by bringing the isolated members into the mainstream economy. And if you go on their website, it's just www.vatsalyagram.org. And I would say spell it like it sounds. So www.vatsalyagram.org. Okay. You'll find on there their mission statement, and it reads, "We believe in providing a positive impact on the lives of people by helping them reduce their problems, aiming at expanding inclusive growth and equalizing the responsibility for sustainable development. And here at Vatsalyagram, women dedicated their lives to caring for children who aren't blood related, but emotionally attached. Each child is raised with so much care and affection that they get ample opportunities to grow and then become responsible citizens of this nation." See, healing from intergenerational trauma certainly awakens and reinforces this connection that we have with our ancestors. Because whenever we awaken to our soul consciousness, we are also empowered then to live out our, let's say, God connection in human relationships. And each day at Vatsalyagram in India, I was reminded of this truth as I was greeted with folded hands and a slight bow and a gentle expression of namaste. The soul in me bows to the soul in you. Tremendous courage is needed to heal intergenerational trauma and embrace the truth and transform into the beautiful soul that all of you are. And whether or not you know much about your ancestral line, or whether or not you see yourself coming from a long history of slaves or slave owners or oppressors or murderers or healers or victims or blue-collar workers, white-collar workers, victims of addictions or suicide or divorce or healthy relationships, these all have a physical, emotional, psychological, and a spiritual component to discovering truth. It's true. The truth does set us free. But it's a freedom that comes with a tremendous amount of responsibility to continue the soul healing process in the lives of those who have come before us and those who have been yet to be born. I'm Dr. James Houck, and you have been listening to Reclaiming Authenticity. Thank you for spending this hour with me. And so on this Mother's Day, may you reach out to all women and thank them for how they've nurtured you, how they've cared for you, how they prayed for you, or whatever the context is. And just to be reminded of the divine feminine energy and the divine masculine energy is in all things. Take care. Bye-bye.
For an answer, or just to leave 1,000 comments, or prodding around to buy a book by Dr. Houck, it's all there. Just wander over to ReclaimingAuthenticity.com and click around. And we'll see you next Wednesday at 9 p.m. Eastern Time, 6 p.m. Pacific, on BBS Radio TV.